Hi, this is Tiffany the Lass.
And Pirate Nick. And we are here with Scott Sower of Sans Simla in the Celebrity Showroom. Frank Sinatra's showroom.
Frank Sinatra's Celebrity Showroom at the Caroneva Resort in North Lake Tahoe.
Legendary.
And we have sewed ourselves away here for an interview here with Sans Simla. Scott, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. I've had a few Negronis, and I'm very excited about this interview. Thank you for the opportunity.
We're so happy you made the drive. Thank you for coming. All of the time that we spent together now feels gone like we lived it away. This is the day. This is the day.
So Scott, tell us, Sans Simla, it started a few years ago. And it wasn't the band that it is now, but tell us how it started.
It started with me recording an album of all the songs I had, kind of a backlog after film school, that I was living in L.A., working in the film industry, living in Silver Lake and very inspired, and I just started writing songs, and then I kind of got out of that life and came up north and started recording. And so I self-recorded the first album, and worked with Scott Reams, the current keyboard player, and a couple of the other guys at Paradise Studios, and sort of started building things from there.
Yeah, and tell us where you are now. You've been performing in the Sacramento area, the Northern California area, for a while. So tell us a little bit about how the band's evolved from where it was when it was just you recording with the multitrack, and how it's come to be where it is now with a live band that you perform with.
Well, I first started out recording the first album and getting it on my friend's label, Green Girl Records in San Francisco. A high school friend of mine, Amy Cray, was a singer-songwriter, and she was sort of signing independent artists. And I, like I said, had already recorded the album, so she put it on a compilation and sent it out to a bunch of college radio stations. And, you know, we got together with her and a drummer, Karen, and did a show, basically. And then just started selling the first album, The Shape of This. And then immediately just kind of started writing new songs for a new album with my friend Aaron Mulho in Placerville, which is where I relocated after Los Angeles, and recorded Rescue California, which was the second Sans Simla album, the latest one really, that came out in 2003. And that was a little more flushed out. You know, it was a full arrangement. The first album was basically just me and a drum machine. And then the second album was of, you know, drums, bass, guitar, keyboards. And we recorded that album, again, having Scott Reams mix it and produce it. And then after that, got enough interest to get a full band together. And since then, we've gone through about three or four incarnations, sort of building, you know, as people could play with us and then had to leave, that kind of thing. And now we've had the current members for about a year now.
So tell us, who are the current members in the band?
The current members are myself, Scott Soa, and then Scott Reams on keyboards, Jeremy Plogue on lead guitar, and Larry Carr on drums, and Dave Garrity on bass.
So what's it been like going from, you know, a very personal experience with music, recording on your own, to having a band with four additional members? What's it been like for you composing the songs? What's been the changes?
Well, there's been no change composing. There's just been a change of getting the live set together.
Yeah.
So we've got basically Scott and I started playing live, and he just started getting great players to play with us. We'd play, and then, you know, he'd invite certain people to the shows, like, that, you know, strategically invite a bassist because he felt we needed a good bassist. And, you know, the guy would say, yeah, let's play together. So we'd get him. And then, like, you know, when the drummer would quit, we'd invite a drummer to, like, an acoustic show. Yeah. And then he'd say, yeah, I'll play with you guys. And so just kind of, I think, you know, Scott felt on the merit of the songs we could get a band together. And so actually it's pretty much to his credit that we have the band we have now.
You've told me that you've started your third album. What's been the change, I guess, I'm getting at? Mm-hmm. With
recording
on your own and recording with four additional musicians?
It's just a lot better. I don't have to write as many parts. I mean,
yeah.
You know, these guys write their own parts. They're all classically trained musicians. basically I just kind of rein them in and sort of guide them in the way. We record every practice, and then I come back and I make CDs for everybody, and then I say, yeah, you know, this sounds good, but it sounds a little this way, where I want it to go this way, and we just work with it. You know, a lot of tempo changes, like let's try the song in 3/4 instead of 4/4. Let's try to, you know, this song could be on any album. Let's try to give it, like, you know, a mariachi feel, or let's try to give this, you know, how about, you know, a lot of it comes from finding our common influences. Like, you know, these guys are very diverse guys, but, you know, there's bands you can all relate to. Like, you know, everybody likes the Beatles, you know, or everybody likes Wilco, or everybody likes Radiohead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, well, how about, remember this Run Radiohead song where they did this with the drums? Let's try that.
Yeah.
Or let's cover a Radiohead song and play it 10 times and then just get that idea or that feel to it, and I'll sing differently. Or so just kind of basically finding our sound. That's all it is. You know, just finding the sound that, you know, with the song is the constant, the chord changes and the lyrics is the constant, and then playing with keyboard tones, playing with drum tones, playing with bass tones, playing with bass arrangements. Right now it seems like the big thing to play with are the rhythm section. You know, if you get the right beat and the right bass line, then and then trying it out for a live audience, like seeing how they react to it. I mean, there's a couple songs that are going to go on the new album now that seriously have 5 different incarnations. There's like, you know, and then there's like, you know, 15 new songs, and probably 9 of them will be on the new album, and, you know, we'll write one as we're doing it. So just kind of finding our sound, basically. And it's a lot easier to do that when you have 5 guys helping you than to where you're just kind of sitting by yourself with a computer. There's not going to be that much, there's not going to be as many brains working on the project as and that's a plus and a minus. But I think overall, if you get good people that care about the product, then it's just a lot easier. The quality just goes up exponentially.
You mentioned the third album. Your last two albums, each of the albums has had a unique design on the cover and in the liner notes. Do you have any plans for the third album yet?
I want to get to the core of what makes us unique as being a California band, a Northern California rock band, and how that would reflect to a larger audience. So I don't know what that's going to be. I mean, I'm probably, there's a guy I worked with on the last album, Oren Miller, who's a great Placerville-based artist, painter, multimedia artist, who I think did a great job on Rescue with just a bunch of photographs that me and my wife took. And I would actually like this time to just give him a demo of the album and just say, this time I'm just do whatever. I mean, I'd kind of like more paintings, more. I've been having visions of the whole Spanish idea of the Sacred Virgin, like that oval shaped image of a woman kind of thing, and maybe making that more of a accessible, not just a religious based image, but more of a, you know, like a something that gets to the core of a California sound, mm-hmm. you know, anything that reflects that. But yeah, that's kind of secondary. I just like to get the album recorded, and I think that when you put creative minds and you give them some freedom, and then you sort of guide them after they start giving you stuff, that'll pretty much take care of itself. And I trust, you know, the people I work with as far as that goes. But I'm really looking forward to working with Oren again on the album design.
Did Oren design the first album too?
No, that was really pieced together by myself and a friend of mine, Tim Hennessy, that just knows a lot about Photoshop.
Uh-huh.
And I just gave him a bunch of pictures. I mean, the first album was, I mean, you know, one thing about recording albums, they just represent a backlog of work that you've done since the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And the first album was the backlog of my life. So there was just so much stuff that was already there. So I just gave him pictures out of my personal photo album of, like, you know, a pizza box that we all drew on and spilled on for my 21st birthday. And then, you know, a superimposed picture of the San Diego skyline and, you know, a drunk picture of me, like, with long hair.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was really easy. It gets harder and harder because there's less of a body of things to pull from.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, it's better because it's not so much about my life anymore. It's more about the songs and what it would represent to another person. So I think that makes it more representative of the music at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably what we'll do for the next one. And as far as the first one goes, it was just like, you know, I mean, the first one was very personal. The first album was just like relationships and girls and, you know, moments in life. So it was kind of a no-brainer, you know. But this next one will be much more conceptual, and, you know, I'll leave that up to whoever does the album design.
Tell us about how the name Sansimilar came about.
Well, that's easy. I wanted to call the band San Simeon because I really like Hearst Castle. I've been there a few times, and I just love that whole... Something about the aesthetic of the Central Coast and, I don't know. It has nothing to do with William Randolph Hearst or anything. It's just like I just thought Simeon was a cool word, right? Yeah. So, but there's all, at the time, there was an indie band called Simeon that a couple of my friends were into, so I couldn't call it that. So I was just like, Sansimilar. And then it just sounded good to me because at the time, I was writing it as one word, Sansimilar. And a lot of my friends that speak French were like, oh, you're saying you're without any similarity. You're so original. And I was like, no, that's not good because we're so derivative. You know, like basically it's the Beatles times me times, you know, whatever other bands influence me. So we separated it, Sansimilar, which I guess literally in Spanish would be Saint Similar. Oh. So it's kind of like the saint of everything similar.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I've still like sort of regretted that name sometimes because every time somebody asks me, what's your band name? Sansimilar. It's always what?
Yeah.
Sense what? And you're like, well, yeah, like San Francisco, but similar. Sansimilar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of stuck, and like we did the first album that way, so it's just kind of stuck. But that's how we came up with it. And there are people that go, that's a great name. And then there's those people that go, huh? But I don't know. I mean, if I was smart, I would have come up with the next Nirvana, which I think is a great name, or Stone Roses, or I mean, there's great band names, but, you know.
Well, to me, it's a great representation of where you are geographically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you're dealing with the central, the Northern California sound, and it really sort of represents where you are and the musicians you're playing with and the sounds that maybe are influencing you. I mean, is that, do you feel that, or is that just something that I'm taking from the...
No, I feel that. Thank you. I'm glad you feel that too. I'm hoping more people feel that. You know, I remember one of the press releases for the first album said something like, you know, a new city on the sonic landscape.
Yeah.
Sansimilar, like San Diego, San Sebastian, or, you know, whatever. There's so many cities around the world, San something. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was apt, you know, but I don't know. I like the similar. One thing I find is, like, when I'm reading anything and I see the word similar, I mean, of course, to me, it evokes the name of my band. Mm-hmm. And if that can ever happen, I think that's a great thing to evoke it with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, similar. A similar experience to X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Like, this song reminds me of, you know, my experiences. They're similar. You know, that's great. I like the word similar. It's positive connotation. I don't think there's anything negative about that. Mm. So,
One of my favorite songs is Take Aim, and I was wondering, that's not on your second album. Is it going to be on your next album?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? I just love how it's the nursery rhyme of merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Yeah, it's about, I mean, it originated from, you know, my relationship with my wife. I mean, the first line is get to the point. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think she ever said that to me, but I remember just ruminating about a... argument we had, and either her or I were thinking, like, get to the point. Mm-hmm. You know, what the hell are you saying? And I think it's just a song about reconciling, you know, personal perspectives, and then sort of realizing that it's so not important. Is you'll get me and I'll get you as long as we're dedicated to it, and as long as we try to do it in a positive way. I mean, that's just songs just about, you know, I care about what you think, so I'm gonna try to make you understand where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you'll understand where I'm coming from because I'm gonna try to make you understand, and I'm gonna understand where you're coming from because I'm trying really hard to understand you. And as long as, and it's all, you know, just this thing that we're doing because we have to, because we love each other, and it'll all work out, you know. So that's what the song's about, like, just accepting the whole situation for what it is, not getting, you know, not having any anxiety about the situation itself, but just accepting it and then going through the motions and doing it in a loving way.
Get to the point, you said. You said it, how could I not get it? It's stuck in my head. is stuck in my head. It's the same old point to me that you'll get eventually.
And how do you take an emotion like that and communicate it to four other members of the band to come up with the song that you've come up with?
I don't know that I communicate it. I just play it for them, and then they, I think what they do is they say, this is what's most appropriate here. And then our first incarnation of it is very acceptable because they're all very good musicians. And then I take it and I come back and I piss them off by going, yeah, well, this is very cliche. Like, you guys have come up with some great parts, but it's not special because what we need to do is make this stand out. And so, I mean, currently I think Take Aim has become, it's become, I've just kind of tried to strip it down to its essence of, let's just let the vocals come through on this one, because this is not, so there's a lot of texture going on in the current incarnation of it. It's just very, like, the guitar is very, like, just, like, he does a really good solo in the middle of it, but it's very textural. Like, he's really good at just, like, hitting a pedal and filling things in. And the keyboards are really good. It's a nice specific part, and the drums are very minimal, and the bass is very minimal. I think that's a very lyrical vocal song.
Yeah.
It's more about the lyrics there, so...
And what about your song, Allied Inside? Is that going to be on the next album?
Yeah, for sure. That's more of a, like a big song. Like, it starts, it's a long song. It takes a lot of patience to get through. It starts kind of like with a, I think, a chord progression I was inspired by Elliott Smith to write, sort of really dissonant, quiet vocals at the beginning. It's about just kind of a very internal emotion, like, talking about secrets. And for me, the Allied Inside is all about trying to reconcile yourself with big world problems. Like, basically, I was thinking about that song at the time. I was thinking that the central problem in the world is people trying to reconcile their religious beliefs with the other people's religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I sort of came up with the metaphor of it being a secret. Like, everybody's got their own secret belief in what they think is right as far as spirituality goes. And, you know, what, even, you know, every, you know, Christian has a different inside idea of what Christianity is all about or what God's all about. And same with, you know, people who believe, people who are Muslim or people who are Hindu or people who are, whatever thing they just subscribe to. So I sort of tried to boil it down to a whole, oh, it's just a secret that we all keep. And let's just keep that inside and get along but respect the fact that we all have the secret and not make an exclusive, not say, like, well, my secret should be yours.
Yeah.
Like, my belief should be yours. Or and then it turns into sort of like an idea of a utopia. Like, I want to paint this whole new idea of a perfect world.
Uh-huh.
And let's see how beautiful that is, because that's a lot more beautiful than trying to turn my world into your world or make your world mine. And that's just, it's a very simple idea, and I just sort of tried to put words to it. And then musically, I had just written too many chords, uh-huh. So we had to come up with all these parts. And so it's like a really big song, but I think it'll definitely be on the album because, you know, I don't really care if it's accessible or not. It's like, you know, if anybody likes Elliott Smith, they'll like that. They'll like that song because... Although it's not as melodic as his stuff, and I'm not nearly the songwriter he is, it hits the same chord of that whole common experience, that whole common internal, experience of really caring really deeply about something. And then just, whether you care about that same thing deeply or not, as long as you care about something else deeply, I can identify with you. And that's how we're, you know, that's where the title came from, Allied Inside. We're all allied inside. As long as we know that we all care about something, that's enough, because we're good people that care about something. So...
I am going to paint me in a century. itself. Calcutta will be my hometown. Calcutta inside myself. And if you make me say the words out,
that's just like a three-syllable word that sounded better than, what were we saying? For a while, I changed the lyric to, what was it? Jerusalem.
Oh.
Jerusalem. Jerusalem. Yeah, but that was way too obvious, you know? That's just like, you hear that, you're like, okay, guy's trying too hard. But Calcutta is like, it really kind of like, it's like back in the throat, and it really like, it's kind of like a, it's an ugly and beautiful word at the same time. I really know nothing about the city of Calcutta. I've tried to sort of like ask some people I know that know a lot about stuff what Calcutta is all about, and the most I've gotten was that like it was the original colonial capital when you know Britain took over, and that there was a there's some myth about the whole of Calcutta. There was like a really bad prison there or something, but it has nothing to do with the song. It's just like that's a very fantasy part of the song. It's like, here's an idea, like, let's all move to Calcutta and get along, and, like, it really makes no sense, but it, that's kind of what's beautiful about it, because it could be any city, like, Jerusalem, okay, it's you know, got a lot of, you know, it's got a lot of significance to a lot of people, but only because they think that, you know, and that's no reason to kill someone, that was my point, you know, so, hey, let's pick another country that sounds, let's pick another city that sounds good in my song, you know, I don't know, that's probably very, like... sacrilegious, but that's what I was talking about. So,
so what kind of music is influencing you these days? What's the type of stuff that Scott's listening to these days?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of Greg Laswell. I love his new album, Through Toledo. I heard Sing Teresa Says, and I loved it, just because of the structure of it. And then I actually heard him talk about it on
Fire Pods.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I, you know, I like, it was about his grandmother, which I thought was beautiful, you know, it's beautiful, and then, but the one that really hooked me was High and Low, about, I think it's about, you know, a relationship of his, but the way it's, you know, he's just playing piano, and it's got a great, you know, slight bass in there, and he's just singing so beautifully, and, you know, it reminded me a lot of the feelings I got from a lot of other great albums when I first heard them, so that's one I'm listening to, and then, this artist, Vienna Tang, has a new album out called Listen Through the Noise that I think is amazing.
You've written a few blogs about the Silver Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they from? I've never heard of them.
Oh, God, I don't know. North Carolina, I think, is where he lives now. Dave Berman is the force behind that. And he's been making albums for a long time, but he made a couple of his albums with Steve Malkmus from Pavement. And that's how I got introduced. And, you know, I was all about Pavement. I was like, what's Steve Malkmus doing? Oh, he just made this album with Silver Jews. And he's just this amazingly evocative poet. I think he's more of a poet than a musician. I mean, his lyrics are amazing. And I did a blog about Tanglewood Numbers, which is their latest album, which is him coming back and making an album after a long respite. And it's just like, it's like what I was talking to you about. I think I was talking to you about this earlier. Maybe it's before we were recording, about how that backlog of ideas comes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so obvious. This guy had a huge backlog of ideas after a very rich and trying experience. And it's just all on this album. And it's just so amazing. I mean, that first song, I think it's called Punks in the Beer Light or something like that. I mean, it's just the first line is just amazing. So, I mean, I don't know if Silver Jews is a good one to recommend to people because it's kind of hard to get into, especially if you're not into Pavement and that kind of indie rock sound. But for me, it's been very, I've caught myself writing songs and realizing after a while that they're just a ripoff of his stuff. Cause it's just, I mean, it just really resonates with me. Like I just wrote this one song, that I'm trying to get through, called, I'm Not Trying to Be Nice. And it's I just realized the whole melody was the first song of that album, so I've had to like totally redo it. But it's just one of those bands that just gets in my head. Another band like that is Dr. Dog, this album they did called Easy Beat. And it's just, it's one of those albums that you can just tell is just the culmination of so much life experience and so much, you know, work went into this, you know, subconscious and consciously when they recorded it. I mean, that's just kind of me saying that too, but I really believe that. I mean, I wonder if you asked them if they would say that's really the case, but those are the albums I like.
Mm-hmm. How much of it to you is there are two experiences that you get from listening to songs. There's the melody and there's the construct of the actual song and there's the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And to different people, some people hit it with the song itself. Some people hit it with the lyrics. How do you balance that when you're writing a song?
You just work with really good people, I think. I mean, I think you start. I usually write the music first, and then I start. You know, a phrase will come out of it, and then I'll build on that. Like, you know, I don't keep a journal, but I write things down, or I keep ideas in my head about things I want to do, and then it'll just be chance. I mean, I'm not a classically trained musician, so I'll just play around on the guitar and I'll find a bunch of chords that go together and then I'll realize I'm singing a certain refrain to it and then maybe syllabically certain words fit and then I just try to add meaning to them through the thoughts I've thought about. And I think that just reflects my opinion that the best song is one where content and form are totally symbiotic and they're all appropriate together. Yeah. But I'm definitely guilty of writing songs in their original carnation that were not appropriate. Like, you know, the lyrics fit. And then I realized, dude, this song doesn't sound like that emotion. Yeah. So then, you know, you go back and you change it or you find other words that fit. And I know I think I've done it every way. I mean, I'll start with a lyric and then you write a song and then you'll start with a chord and then you write a song. I think the best thing to do for me is just to not stop until it sounds right all the way. You know, if it doesn't sound right, you just go, okay, well, it doesn't sound right. No offense to everybody else in the band, but it's not there yet. So let's either go away from it and come back, or let's really hash it out, depending on the enthusiasm that's there for the song.
Have you listened to songs before where you've heard lyrics that you really think are fantastic and they just have not matched up sonically to where you expect they should?
Like,
to complement the types of things you're hearing lyrically?
Well, like in my stuff or other people's stuff?
Other people's stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I just don't think they did it all the way. I mean, every band does that. I mean, it's just hard to do it all the time. Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to name any names. I will name names. I think the Beatles did it a couple times.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they wrote these beautiful things and you could tell they maybe smoked too much that day and, you know, they had too much money behind them and they, you know. But it's beautiful, though, because, you know, they're the Beatles and it's Paul McCartney's voice or it's, you know, John Lennon screaming. I don't know. I mean, sure, everybody does it. But that's a personal thing. I could say it doesn't fit, but then somebody else might say, yeah, what are you talking about? That's a great song, you know. So, of course people do it. I think people do it a lot now. I mean, I think in pop music, most people care about the beat and the production value, so it happens all the time. I mean, I'll say this. I think there's a lot of pop music that you can tell. Like, you know, you listen to some of the greatest songs ever written, like some of the greatest pop songs ever written, you can tell they're not talking about anything. You know what I mean? Like, my joke that I always do is Wind of Change by Scorpions. Like, that's a great song. You know, it starts with a guy whistling, and then it's like, take me. But what's he saying? Take me to the magic of the moment on a glory night. Like, that guy doesn't speak English. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful song. I'm not downplaying it at all. But the point is, it's like, well, that maybe might be a okay example of lyrics not quite matching up to content. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or, you know, you hear current hits by people that, like, I kind of wonder, well, that's probably like a Swedish or Norwegian producer that's amazing, and he just wrote whatever he thought, and then maybe, you know, Avril Lavigne added something that made sense to it, which is cool, but you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't quite, but actually, those are sometimes the songs I love the most, because it's so not about the lyric, it's about like, wow, that girl's got such a beautiful voice, and it's so well produced, and we're all dancing to it, and who cares, you know what I mean? So... But that's not necessarily what I strive for. I mean, I'd love to work with those guys, but as long as they make me sound good, that's great, you know. But I'd like to try my best to make the lyrics match it, you know what I mean? There's one story my guitar player told me about. My guitar player's really into Wilco, and he didn't introduce me to them, but he sort of introduced me to their back. I mean, I really liked Yankee Hotel Foxtrot because of all the press that came out about it. And I just loved it from the first listen. And then he sort of got me into the other stuff that they had done. And I think one song on Summer Teeth, the first song, I don't know the name of it, but it's like, it's all beginning, da-na-na-na. I just thought that was a great song. It was like just as good as anything on Park Life by Blur, just a really well-done pop song. Mm-hmm. And the story he told me about it was that their label said, look, okay, we want you to work with a really great producer. And we just want you to give it a try. And so they went in with a song that they didn't even really feel that was that good, and he just flushed it out, you know, because he's coming from it from a totally different angle of what sounds great, what's most appropriate, where does this song go sonically, and, you know, to get somebody involved on that level who's just thinking from a very good objective point of view, I think is great. And that's probably, I mean, the Beatles had their George Martin, and, you know, a lot of other bands have had that person in there going, you know, let me back away from it and show you guys what else this could be. You know, and I think that's great. You know.
Back to the new record that's coming out. When can your fans expect that?
You mean my mom? Well, Mom, I'm working real hard. I'm trying to, like, you know, make mortgage payments and take care of Amy and Dominic. So, you know, there's that to consider. I mean, we're into it, you know. We record every practice at this point, and I mean, I feel personally, because of the engineering knowledge of Scott Reams and some of the guys in the band, that we could really, at this point, take the rehearsal recordings and, you know, clean them up and maybe overdub the vocals and add some stuff to it, and it would be okay. But I think the band really wants to sit down and methodically track the album. So however long that takes, I mean, I would say by the end of the year, but I said that last year, so I'm not rushing it at all. Yeah, I mean, like I was talking to you guys about earlier, you know, the album is a good idea, and it's always something that people should aim for, but I mean, if I'm putting out every song on MySpace, and, you know, you can buy it on Snowcap, and, you know, if you're really into it, you can get it, you know what I mean? So that's what we're going to do. I think that's what we're just going to start recording next week, and... you know, not practicing, but recording and tracking and picking a song and flushing it out and and then finishing it and saying it's done and moving on for better or for worse. So not too long. I mean, I'd like to get it out there so that the people there have new songs to interface with and really get excited about, because, you know, we have the songs from the last album that people are excited about at the shows and they dance to, and then we play one of the new ones, and, you know, some of them who have been coming to the show recognize it, so then, like, half of the people are, like, dancing, and then, you know, we'll play a newer one that we've only played at, like, three shows, and they get, you know, exponentially the excitement, or the, I should say, the ability to interface with it goes down. So I'm anxious to get it out there in some form or another so that people can, you know, get excited about it and work it into their, you know, lives and you know, go listen to it at home and then go to the show and get excited and have an experience and all that stuff. So not too long.
Great.
Well, Scott, thank you. Sounds similar. We can't wait for the new album, and we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us here in the Celebrity Showroom at Caldeneva Resort. And maybe you'll play here sometime. Who knows, eh?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Frank for building this amazing facility and for the nice people at Caldeneva for locking us in.
They don't know we're here.
After we snuck in after hours, and the nice bartender for...
Completely empty.
So let's just, on that note... Can you give us a pirate R?
I'd like to thank you for listening to this interview, mateys.
R. All right. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.